College English Test, Band 4, Part 2, Listening Comprehension.
Section A, Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said. Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center. Now, let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 1.
Did you watch the 7 o'clock program on Channel 2 yesterday evening? I was about to watch it when someone came to see me.
Yeah, it reported some major breakthrough in cancer research. People over 40 would find the program worth watching.
What do we learn from the conversation about the TV program?
Question 2.
I won the first prize in the national writing contest, and I got this camera as an award.
It's a good camera. You can take it when you travel. I had no idea you were a marvelous writer.
What do we learn from the conversation?
Question 3.
I wish I hadn't thrown away that reading list.
I thought you might regret it. That's why I picked it up from the waste paper basket and left it on the desk.
What do we learn from the conversation?
Question 4.
Are you still teaching at the junior high school?
Not since June. My brother and I opened a restaurant as soon as he got out of the army.
What do we learn about the man from the conversation?
Question 5.
Hi, Susan. Have you finished reading the book Professor Johnson recommended?
Oh, I haven't read it through the way I'd read a novel. I just read a few chapters, which interested me.
What does the woman mean?
Question 6.
Jane missed class again, didn't she? I wonder why.
Well, I knew she had been absent all week, so I called her this morning to see if she was sick. It turned out that her husband was badly injured in a car accident.
What does the woman say about Jane?
Question 7.
I'm sure the Smith's new house is somewhere on this street, but I don't know exactly where it is.
But I'm told it's 2 blocks from their old home.
What do we learn from the conversation?
Question 8.
I've been waiting here almost half an hour. How come it took you so long?
Sorry, honey. I had to drive 2 blocks before I spotted a place to park the car.
What do we learn from the conversation? Now you'll hear the 2 long conversations. Conversation 1.
Hello, I have a reservation for tonight.
Your name, please?
Nelson, Charles Nelson.
Okay, Mr. Nelson. That's a room for 5 and...
Excuse me? You mean a room for £5? I didn't know the special was so good.
No, no, no. According to our records, a room for 5 guests was booked under your name.
No, no. Hold on. You must have 2 guests under the name.
Okay. Let me check this again. Oh, here we are.
Yeah?
Charles Nelson, a room for 1 for the 19th...
Wait, wait. It was for tonight, not tomorrow night.
I don't think we have any rooms for tonight. There's a conference going on in town, and, let's see. Yeah, no rooms.
Oh, come on. You must have something. Anything.
Well, let me check my computer here. Ah!
What?
There has been a cancellation for this evening. A honeymoon suite is now available.
Great. I'll take it.
But I'll have to charge you £150 for the night.
What? I should get a discount for the inconvenience.
Well, the best I can give you is a 10% discount plus a ticket for a free continental breakfast.
Hey, isn't the breakfast free anyway?
Well, only on weekends.
I want to talk to the manager.
Wait, Mr. Nelson. I think I can give you an additional 15% discount.
Questions 9 to 12 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 9.
What is the man's problem?
Question 10.
Why did the hotel clerk say they didn't have any rooms for that night?
Question 11.
What did the clerk say about breakfast in the hotel?
Question 12.
What did the man imply he would do at the end of the conversation? Conversation 2. Sarah, you work in the admissions office, don't you?
Yes, I've been here 10 years as an assistant director.
Really? What does that involve?
Well, I'm in charge of all the admissions of postgraduate students in the university.
Only postgraduates?
Yes, postgraduates only. I've nothing at all to do with undergraduates.
Do you find that you get a particular sort of different national groups? I mean, do you get larger numbers from Latin America or...
Yes, well, of all the students enrolled last year, nearly half were from overseas. They were from African countries, the Far East, the Middle East, and Latin America.
But have you been doing just that for the last 10 years, or have you done other things?
Well, I've been doing the same job. Before that, I was secretary of the medical school at Birmingham. And further back, I worked in the local government.
Oh, I see.
So I've done different types of things.
Yes, indeed. How do you imagine your job might develop in the future? Can you imagine shifting into a different kind of responsibility? Or doing something...
Oh, yeah. From October 1st, I'll be doing an entirely different job. There's going to be more committee work. I mean, more policy work. And less dealing with students, unfortunately. I'll miss my contact with students.
Questions 13 to 15 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 13.
What is the woman's present position?
Question 14.
What do we learn about the postgraduates enrolled last year in the Women's University?
Question 15.
What will the woman's new job be like? Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear three short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the four choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then, mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 1 with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. My mother was born in a small town in northern Italy. She was 3 when her parents immigrated to America in 1926. They lived in Chicago, where my grandfather worked making ice cream. Mama thrived in the urban environment. At 16, she graduated first in her high school class, went on to secretarial school, and finally worked as an executive secretary for a railroad company. She was beautiful, too. When a local photographer used her pictures in his monthly window display, she felt pleased. Her favorite portrait showed her sitting by Lake Michigan, her hair windblown, her gaze reaching toward the horizon. My parents were married in 1944. Dad was a quiet and intelligent man. He was 17 when he left Italy. Soon after, a hit-and-run accident left him with a permanent limp. Dad worked hard selling candy to Chicago office workers on their break. He had little formal schooling. His English was self-taught. Yet he eventually built a small, successful wholesale candy business. Dad was generous and handsome. Mama was devoted to him. After she married, my mother quit her job and gave herself to her family. In 1950, with 3 small children, Dad moved the family to a farm 40 miles from Chicago. He worked the land and commuted to the city to run his business. Mama said goodbye to her parents and friends and traded her busy city neighborhood for a more isolated life. But she never complained.
Questions 16 to 18 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 16.
What does the speaker tell us about his mother's early childhood?
Question 17.
What do we learn about the speaker's father?
Question 18.
What does the speaker say about his mother? Passage 2. During a 1995 roof collapse, a firefighter named Donald Herbert was left brain damaged. For 10 years, he was unable to speak. Then, one Saturday morning, he did something that shocked his family and doctors. He started speaking. "I want to talk to my wife," Donald Herbert said out of the blue. Staff members of the nursing home where he has lived for more than 7 years raced to get Linda Herbert on the telephone. It was the first of many conversations the 44-year-old patient had with his family and friends during a 14-hour stretch, Herbert's uncle, Simon Manka, said. "How long have I been away?" Herbert asked. "We told him almost 10 years, the uncle said. He thought it was only 3 months. Herbert was fighting a house fire, December 29, 1995, when the roof collapsed, burying him underneath. After going without air for several minutes, Herbert was unconscious for 2.5 months and has undergone therapy ever since. News accounts in the days and years after his injury describe Herbert as blind and with little, if any, memory. A video shows him receiving physical therapy, but apparently unable to communicate and with little awareness of his surroundings. Manka declined to discuss his nephew's current condition or whether the apparent progress was continuing. The family was seeking privacy while doctors evaluated Herbert, he said. As word of Herbert's progress spread, visitors streamed into the nursing home. "He's resting comfortably," the uncle told them.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 19.
What happened to Herbert 10 years ago?
Question 20.
What surprised Donald Herbert's family and doctors one Saturday?
Question 21.
How long did Herbert remain unconscious?
Question 22.
How did Herbert's family react to the public attention? Passage 3. Almost all states in America have a state fair. They last for 1, 2, or 3 weeks. The Indiana State Fair is one of the largest and oldest state fairs in the United States. It is held every summer. It started in 1852. Its goals were to educate, share ideas, and present Indiana's best products. The cost of a single ticket to enter the fair was 20 cents. During the early 1930s, officials of the fair ruled that people could attend by paying with something other than money. For example, farmers brought a bag of grain in exchange for a ticket. With the passage of time, the fair has grown and changed a lot. But it is still one of Indiana's most celebrated events. People from all over Indiana and from many other states attend the fair. They can do many things at the fair. They can watch the judging of the prize cows, pigs, and other animals. They can see sheep getting their wool cut, and they can learn how that wool is made into clothing. They can watch cows giving birth. In fact, people can learn about animals they would never see except at a fair. The fair provides a chance for the farming community to show its skills and farm products. For example, visitors might see the world's largest apple or the tallest sunflower plant. Today, children and adults at the fair can play new computer games or attempt more traditional games of skill. They can watch performances put on by famous entertainers. Experts say such fairs are important because people need to remember that they are connected to the earth and its products, and they depend on animals for many things.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 23.
What were the main goals of the Indiana State Fair when it started?
Question 24.
How did some farmers gain entrance to the fair in the early 1930s?
Question 25.
Why are state fairs important events in America? Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks with the exact words you have just heard. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now, listen to the passage.
Students' pressure sometimes comes from their parents. Most parents are well-meaning, but some of them aren't very helpful with the problems their sons and daughters have in adjusting to college. And a few of them seem to go out of their way to add to their children's difficulties. For one thing, parents are often not aware of the kinds of problems their children face. They don't realize that the competition is keener, that the required standards of work are higher, and that their children may not be prepared for the change. Accustomed to seeing A's and B's on high school report cards, they may be upset when their children's first semester college grades are below that level. At their kindest, they may gently inquire why John or Mary isn't doing better, whether he or she is trying as hard as he or she should, and so on. At their worst, they may threaten to take their children out of college or cut off funds. Sometimes parents regard their children as extensions of themselves and think it only right and natural that they determine what their children do with their lives. In their involvement and identification with their children, they forget that everyone is different and that each person must develop in his or her own way. They forget that their children, who are now young adults, must be the ones responsible for what they do and what they are.
Now the passage will be read again. Students' pressure sometimes comes from their parents. Most parents are well-meaning, but some of them aren't very helpful with the problems their sons and daughters have in adjusting to college. And a few of them seem to go out of their way to add to their children's difficulties. For one thing, parents are often not aware of the kinds of problems their children face. They don't realize that the competition is keener, that the required standards of work are higher, and that their children may not be prepared for the change. Accustomed to seeing A's and B's on high school report cards, they may be upset when their children's first semester college grades are below that level. At their kindest, they may gently inquire why John or Mary isn't doing better, whether he or she is trying as hard as he or she should, and so on. At their worst, they may threaten to take their children out of college or cut off funds. Sometimes parents regard their children as extensions of themselves and think it only right and natural that they determine what their children do with their lives. In their involvement and identification with their children, they forget that everyone is different and that each person must develop in his or her own way. They forget that their children, who are now young adults, must be the ones responsible for what they do and what they are.
Now the passage will be read for the third time. Students' pressure sometimes comes from their parents. Most parents are well-meaning, but some of them aren't very helpful with the problems their sons and daughters have in adjusting to college. And a few of them seem to go out of their way to add to their children's difficulties. For one thing, parents are often not aware of the kinds of problems their children face. They don't realize that the competition is keener, that the required standards of work are higher, and that their children may not be prepared for the change. Accustomed to seeing A's and B's on high school report cards, they may be upset when their children's first semester college grades are below that level. At their kindest, they may gently inquire why John or Mary isn't doing better, whether he or she is trying as hard as he or she should, and so on. At their worst, they may threaten to take their children out of college or cut off funds. Sometimes parents regard their children as extensions of themselves and think it only right and natural that they determine what their children do with their lives. In their involvement and identification with their children, they forget that everyone is different and that each person must develop in his or her own way. They forget that their children, who are now young adults, must be the ones responsible for what they do and what they are.
This is the end of listening comprehension.